You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Sword Art Online After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Sword Art Online After Show.
Hey there, AfterBuzz TV fans. We are here to talk about Sword Art Online, the sword dance of black and white. I'm your host, Megan Salinas, and joining me on the panel today is Tari Miller.
What's your name?
Wow. Destroy the mic.
Destroy the mic. Please don't break it. And Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies.
Unfortunately, Liz Rushmowy can't be here today. She's feeling under the weather. So please tweet at her. Send her your well wishes. We hope she gets well soon.
Get better, Liz.
Yeah, she should be back in the studio next week with us. But what do you guys think of this episode? After a couple filler episodes, we sort of get back to the plot a little bit. What do you think?
I felt like this was another filler episode.
Yeah, but at least there's gameplay. Actually, for those of you listening, we're watching the opening on the TV inside right now. And we actually get bits from the opening in this episode, actually quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great to actually see some more gameplay in this episode. So, at least for me, a lot of this episode was kind of more what I signed up for, or what I expected when I signed up, you know, to watch the series.
Yeah.
A little more, yeah. Although, still, I'm still waiting. I'm waiting for the plot to kick in. I feel like the first two episodes were like, yes, and everything else has been like, okay, we're doing side quests.
But you know the ironic thing about that?
Hi, Booth
is
guy.
That, hey, yeah, I'm the
Hi,
Booth guy.
Hi, Stephen Lemieux.
Hi, Booth guy.
Here, let me turn my camera on so you can see me.
You
I feel like
Stephen
the ironic thing about that is that MMOs are just like that, in that you actually, like, do, like, a few things that kind of pertain to the storyline, and then you probably take about 2 to 3 weeks to build your character up to be able to do something else that's actually fun.
You go on a bunch of side quests, you meet other people, you make some friends, you go to the tavern, hang out.
You wait around in town waiting for a party for about 8 hours before you get one, and then it fails.
Boo.
You sound like you're speaking from experience here.
And I played Final Fantasy XI for like 8 years.
Oh. Lord
Worst
almighty.
Idea of my life.
Oh.
But still, fond memories.
Fun memories. So yeah, that is it. And I think that's a really great thing about this series is that it really takes that love of MMOs and just video games in general and really integrates that into the show.
Yeah.
So I guess, Tari, what do you think of this one? Because Katie and I both spewed a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Just a bit.
I thought it was really good. Like, I really could have taken that whole lizard man battle and just had it been the whole episode and been like, yeah, just keep doing that.
Yeah, if the entire episode had taken place in the dungeon, yeah, I think I would have been all for it too.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go ahead and dive into this episode then, as you just alluded to. We are on floor 74 now. It's October 17th, 2024. They have officially been in this game for about 2 years now. We were around a year and a half the last couple episodes, and now it's like officially been 2 years since they've been stuck in this death game. And we open up on Kirito fighting a lizard man in the dungeon in the 74th floor. And we get this really beautifully animated sequence as he's taking it on and he defeats it. And he's just kind of thinking to himself, like, is this the kind of world that, you know, Kayaba Akihiko wanted to create? Like, is he out there watching somewhere?
And where is he?
And so he decides, I guess, that he's done enough clearing for the day and decides to go on home. And we get this really great, like, pullback shot from, like, the dungeon to the floor itself to the outside world where, you know, it's all 100 floors. And it's this really cool, like, just pullback shot.
Yeah.
Not relevant to anything. I just thought it was a really cool sequence.
It was beautiful.
It was. It's this, if nothing else, this series is just absolutely gorgeous
in
terms of its animation and everything like that. So anyway, as he's on his way home, what does he spy but a ragu rabbit? And we don't really. I was thinking because I had like little beady red eyes that it was going to be like the rabbit from Monty Python.
Yeah,
like, that it was actually secretly a boss.
Death awaits you with really big teeth.
Like it was going to be like a Tonberry or something where it looks like small and innocuous, but in fact it's actually evil, very very evil. But it actually turns out that it's this really rare S-class food, and so he spots it and can't believe it, and he takes aim and he manages to kill it. Mm-hmm. And it's in his inventory now, so he's like, I don't know what to do with it. So he runs down to the 50th floor to Agiel's shop. And he's
because
like...
Because Agiel will know what to do.
Well, because he's looking to sell it because it's kind of like getting your hands on like a Rolls Royce and then not knowing how to drive. You know, that sort of thing. Because he's got this really great S-class food, but he doesn't have enough of a cooking skill in order to like... properly cook it and enjoy it.
He probably does live off of in-game ramen.
Yeah.
Probably.
And burns it occasionally.
That's special if you're burning in-game ramen.
You know, he probably doesn't care about his cooking skill. He probably puts everything into combat. He's probably also the kind of player who saves all his money waiting for something good to buy and then never buys anything with it.
Right.
Like,
he strikes
I might
me
need
as that kind
I might
of character.
Need it. I might need it.
Then again, that's what I do when I play video games. I might need this later. Well, you could buy... No, I might need it later.
I have a hard time selling my inventory in an RPG. I'm like even if like I get something way better, I'm like, but I had such good times in that one. Like, what if I need it?
Well, I sell it, and then I get the money, and then I don't ever spend the money.
Yeah, I feel...
We would not survive this game.
Probably not,
just,
no.
We would not survive this game.
Sorry,
we
anyway.
Excellent cooks.
Thanks?
I just threw everything into a skillet. Anyway, so he's trying to sell it to Agiel because he can't do anything with it, and Agiel's kind of having the same dilemma in that he wants it, but it really wouldn't do much good in his hands. When who should arrive, speaking of cooking skill, but Asuna, and she has a bodyguard, Kuradil, in tow, and
the first thing Kirito says,
I found my chef. He grabs her by the hand and earnestly looks into her eyes and goes, I found my chef.
It's like, no,
smooth,
no,
bro.
Okay, you've known her for 2 years. You're 17 at this point. Why are you still...
But it was actually really funny to have him go, I found my chef, and then, I mean, hi! So,
all of
buddy!
My problems are solved!
You want to do me a solid...
To his credit, I mean, she is a foodie, and it's been established. So.
Yeah, we found out a couple episodes ago that she actually is a fantastic cook. And actually, in his defense, I would be cautious about mentioning that, because the last time he, trying to make small talk, was talking about her cooking skill.
She murdered his sandwich.
Yeah, his sandwich died, and the last thing he wants to do is lose this ragu rabbit. But he
it's
decides...
It's already dead!
Yeah, but it hasn't erupted
in
the blue
polygons.
But, so he makes her a proposal. He's like, tell you what, if you do me a favor and cook this, I'll let you have a little bit of it. And she looks him in the eye and goes, half. I'll do it if I get half the food. And he shrugs and he looks at Agiel, sorry, man. You
I'll
heard the lady.
And Agiel's like, can you save me a bite?
And they're like, nope, sorry, you heard the lady. And poor Agiel is sitting there as they're walking out of the store together. And he just, that's cold. That is really cold. I forgot to actually mention when he sees, when Kirito sees Asuna entering the store, he offhandedly says, what are you doing in a dump like this? Agiel
right behind him. That's what you get for being friends with Kirito. Evidently,
say,
you either die or get insulted all the time.
With friends like these.
Exactly. Not even these, just this guy.
With friends like this guy, you get insulted and then you get jilted out of getting any food.
Poor Agiel.
But anyway, so they're going out into the street and they're getting ready to go over to Asuna's flat because Kirito doesn't have necessarily the tools that they need in order to properly prepare this meal. And so she goes, okay, we'll go to my house just this once and we'll prepare it there. When her bodyguard, Kuradil, raises some objections and raise your hand right now if you don't like the look of this guy at all.
Yeah.
Like this guy.
Can I raise them both?
Go right ahead. Go.
Superman.
Football.
That's all you know about football.
I was thinking touchdown. Just football. That's the World Cup going on right now. Sports.
Wrong football. Wrong football.
Sports. Anyway. But anyway, Kuradil, he raises some objections. He doesn't want, it's his job, essentially, to watch after Asuna. And he doesn't like the idea of her going off with this shady-looking guy. And I love that this is, like, the second time we've heard Kirito referred to as a shady-looking guy.
It's the coat.
Definitely. It's the coat. Which is kind of weird, because he doesn't look all that different from anybody else. But I guess his reputation precedes him in terms of being, like, a beater. Because right. Everybody seems to, or at least this person in particular, seems to recognize him as a beater.
Well, and I think you assume that when you are charged with protecting a teenage girl, every guy looks like a menace. That may not be his motivation the entire way, but I let her go off with this person and then bad things happened. Shoot.
I think that would be the case if his intentions were good.
Yeah,
I don't think he has good intentions, just from what we've seen of this character in this episode. I don't like this guy.
I
he sets off a lot of alarm bells. But anyway, so she basically, as second in command of the Knights of the Blood Oath, she basically orders him to go back to base because Kirito's at least 10 levels higher than him anyway. They know each other, and he can do a lot better job of being her bodyguard than Kuradil can, which to me makes no sense in any case because I don't think Asuna needs a bodyguard.
No.
She's the second in command of the whole guild.
The entire guild. So why does she... we find out as they're going off together that it's become guild policy for all of the higher-ups to have these bodyguards. But her in particular, I'm like... She doesn't need a bodyguard. What's the deal?
It would make sense in case you get ambushed by someone like Laughing Coffin or you wind up with too many enemies to handle. It's always good to have someone watching your back.
That's right. True.
That's why solo players have trouble.
But they're also in the safe zone. So theoretically, nothing bad can happen to you. even if you jump out of a window and land on your face, you'll be okay. As we've seen before. So there's theoretically nothing bad can happen to you in the safe zone. Anyway, but as they go down to floor 61, which is Selmberg, and it's another really beautiful floor. It looks very oceanic, mm-hmm. like the ocean time at sunset. There's all this water everywhere. It's just absolutely gorgeous floor.
She basically has a flat in Malibu.
That's basically it. Yeah, she and they start talking, and Kirito's remarking on how beautiful the place is, and she's like, "You should get a place here." And he's like, "I don't know if I have that kind of money." Even though we saw in the previous scene that he really does have quite a bit of money. Yeah. He's got tons and tons of cash, but you're absolutely right.
He can't imagine blowing it all on a flat. He might need it for something later.
He might need it for something important.
Never let a girl know how much money you have.
Well played, Stephen. Well played.
What's
you make
that
an
from?
Excellent point. But anyway, so they go to her house, and he is looking around, and he finds out from her that her place, which is absolutely gorgeous, it's like this mansion, with the house and the furniture, cost about 4 million coal.
Jeez.
And yeah, he does sit down and he says that. He's like, I can't imagine. I've earned about that much, but I can't imagine blowing it all on one place, which, you know, kind of makes sense because he is kind of a loner. We don't even know what his house, if he has one, what it looks like. I imagine he was just the type of person to go from inn to inn.
Yeah.
Never really have sort of a home base. That was my impression anyway.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I mean, though, I imagine he's a little practical. I can't speak today. He's pretty practical, so like going from end to end would probably cost him more than it would to just have a house.
You're looking at it from an investment standpoint in the real world. I really don't know if it would. Like, how much money would it actually cost to, you know, stay at an inn for a night?
Well, for 2 years, though.
That's true. Then again, he is rich, so
yeah.
He can do whatever he wants.
So
anyway, Asuna comes out, and she's in casual clothes. She's in this really cute, like, set of shorts and this really cute shirt, and she's like, take your coat off! You know, get comfortable. And she starts preparing the meal. In what is like, if you've ever actually sat down and cooked a real meal, it was kind of amazing to watch her cook and just to, like, touch the touch an icon and to have it cut into these perfectly uniform pieces.
Yeah.
And then to go to all the vegetables and do the exact same thing and have them all chopped up perfectly.
I was so angry watching that because that's like an hour's prep time. In real life, you just spend trying to cut all the fat off the chicken and trying to get it into pieces.
And
that
she
won't
just
be
sort of shrugs and goes, in Sword Art Online, you know, there aren't nearly as many steps as there are in real life, so it's kind of boring.
Yeah. Let's rub it into the viewers.
Yeah, it's true. If you've ever taken, like, any amount of, like, couple hours just to make a really nice meal for, like, you and, like, a friend, it's really not that easy.
Right.
So it is kind of insulting.
It really is.
The awesome part about it is that, like, that means that you can make gourmet meals in a matter of seconds. And you could eat as much as you want because your body will never change.
Yeah, you'll just waste away while you're on that IV in the hospital.
Whatever.
Oops.
But you make an excellent point. Like, that's probably how she was able to max out her cooking skill, which is the reason why she's the perfect person, you know, to prepare this meal for Kirito. And as they finish the meal and they sit down and they're talking about how people over the course of 2 years have really become accustomed to life in the game. There are far fewer players out on the front lines. There are only about 500 now that are actively clearing the floors, which sounds like it's a huge decrease from what it used to be. And
right.
That people have become accustomed to the way of life. You know, as long as you stay in the safe zones, you're relatively safe. And like we've seen before, like in the previous episode with Lisbeth Smith's shop, that you can earn a living, you know, just staying on one floor and, you know, honing things for other people. And even Agil with his shop, you know, you can make a decent living and get used to it. And so it's really sad that a lot of people just don't really seem to care about going back into the real world.
Right.
Well, and I bet a good number of people on the front lines have straight up died as well. And then people just don't come to take their place.
That's very true, too. Yeah. So it's a very interesting dilemma that they're finding themselves in. But at the same time, they've also gotten used to it. Kirito says that he goes days and days without thinking of the real world. And Asuna says that, you know, there are days where she feels like she's been here all her life.
Yeah.
So it really is a testament. People really can get used to the most unusual circumstances. Anything can become normal. That's something that humanity is really good at, is actually normalizing stuff. So anyway, as they're talking, they come to the realization that the dungeon that Kirito was in the beginning of the episode, they're in the process of clearing that. But Asuna says that she actually wouldn't mind taking some time off from the guild because things have gotten kind of weird now that there are a much bigger guild than they used to be. And so she's wondering why he's still kind of more of a solo player. And he remarks that he's like, well, I work better on my own. And she gives him a look and brandishes a butter knife at him.
Other people just get in my way.
Everyone except for you, of course.
He can't go through a conversation without either the threat of physical violence or actually getting beaten down by her.
Well,
I kind of love that.
We saw in last week's episode that without her there to kind of keep him in check, he will just say all sorts of really rude things to people. And they'll just sort of sit there and take it. And she's the only one that doesn't take it from him. So
yeah.
I like that. But they basically come to the conclusion that she invites him to join her party. She's like, we don't have any leveling up quotas to make. I want to take a day off. I want to play hooky. And so that she invites him to join her party. And they'll go off to the dungeon and do more dungeon clearing before they make it to the boss, obviously. And so she sends him an invitation. And he's sitting there drinking his tea, stewing in his indignation, like not accepting her request. And then, sure enough, she brandishes the butter knife again. And he's like, okay, and accepts the friend request. And she goes right back to smiling cheerfully.
And she pours him more tea.
So, yeah, these two have a very interesting dynamic.
She wears the pants.
Very much so. And as they're getting ready to part ways for the night, they're taking out a look at the night sky. And again, he brings up Kayaba Akihiko, like, is this really the world he wanted to create? And so we cut to the next morning, and he is waiting on floor 74 near the teleport gate. And this, I'm going to go ahead and put a disclaimer. I liked the first half of this episode. I can't say that I'm really a fan of the second half of this episode with
and
where
then
it went.
This happens.
I'm watching Sword Art Online, and then all of a sudden, without anybody asking, they changed the channel to Ranma One Half on me.
And or like Love Hina or just
anything like that. And that's fine if I'm in the mood for that, but not while I'm watching Sword Art Online. If I'm watching Sword Art Online, I want to see some sword fighting.
Get used to it.
I know. I'm gonna have a lot of issues with the series as it progresses, aren't I?
So what happens is Asuna comes tumbling out of the portal and runs straight into Kirito and takes him completely by surprise. And what does he latch onto? I'll give you one guess.
It's not
the ground.
The ground.
I wish.
Oh, you're an optimist.
He ends up fondling her by accident,
yeah,
and of course, and because she's a character with a lot of integrity, she smacks him into the wall, very much insulted. And instead of apologizing, he just says, good morning.
So, and it just keeps going. He's like, I feel so, oh, it's soft. Oh, it's squishy. And it's just like,
just drawing it out.
So, okay.
This is less Kirito's an idiot and more an author or an animator or someone felt the need to put this in there.
I'm not sure if this is something directly from the light novels. And I know that anime in general, like, this is a common source of humor. I can't say that I'm a fan of this type of humor. Having grown up on a lot of anime, I'm kind of over these types of jokes.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry if maybe I'm being a stickler, but
it's a
just,
fan service. Get
it's
over
a fan
it.
Service
I already
thing.
Know there's jerks online. I don't want to see it.
That's very true. Anyway, to go ahead and just move past
Skate
that
past
now that,
that
now that we've talked about how much I didn't like it. Anyway, so We see that she actually, once they're both up and about, she actually runs behind him, which also raised a really huge red flag for me, because they are on par with each other. Why would she feel the need to shove him out in front of her? And that's when we see Kuradil come out of the teleport gate as well. And he is basically, you know, after Asuna, because it's his quote-unquote job to protect her, to be her bodyguard. But she feels that he's been overstepping his bounds like none other, because he's hanging around her house, he's generally just being a creeper.
Yeah.
And he's definitely overstepping his bounds, and she's the second in command. If she tells you to buzz off, you should buzz off, because she pulls rank on you.
There's just so many flavors of not okay with what this guy's doing. It sets off the creeper alarms really badly.
Yeah, he's kind of treating her like a pet.
Wait, it's not romantic?
No.
God, this isn't Twilight. This is not Twilight.
Yeah. Anyway, so he goes over and he grabs her by the wrist and starts dragging her over to the teleport gate, when Kirito grabs him and goes, look, I'm relieving you of your second in command today. I need to borrow her for the day. You can go ahead and just go on back. I've got this. And that's when we get this Kuradil challenging Kirito to a duel, because this is a shady beater. And so Kirito looks at Asuna for permission, because this is a member of her guild. And she nods. She goes, I'll explain to the guild leader what happened. And so they engage in a duel. And again, in a very beautifully animated sequence, Kirito breaks Kuradil's sword in half. It was actually really awesome to see, like, you know, the way the swords glowed and slow motion with everything. The series is just beautiful to look at.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
And
I can't stress that
like
enough.
And then it does things like this.
And so Kuradil is not taking losing the duel graciously. He pulls out a dagger to continue the fight and rushes at Kirito, and that's when Asuna disarms him and basically finally pulls rank on him and goes, I'm second in command. I am ordering you to go back to base and await further orders. And with the two of them, I wouldn't want to mess with either of them, let alone the two of them together. Kuradil does very indignantly turn back around and go to the teleport gate and leaves, presumably to go back to headquarters. But But, ladies and gentlemen, the important thing from this duel, as much as I dislike the idea of, you know, Kirito having to be a knight in shining armor and
fighting over Asuna like a piece of property.
Kuridel being a general creeper.
And complaining about cheating.
The important thing is that a member from Laughing Coffin from two episodes ago was in the audience watching this duel and just sort of smiled and turned around and left.
So what you have to wonder is he watching Kirito or is he watching Asuna?
Did he just happen to be there? Was it just
could
a coincidence?
But Kirito, he's a beater. Everyone who sees him knows, okay, he's the Black Swordsman. He's got a fair amount of power behind him. Asuna is the second in command of a huge guild and not only has physical power, but also has political pull.
Very much so.
So who's he keeping an eye on? Why? What's he doing?
Who are the Knights of Murder Guild? Are the Knights of the Blood Oath, are they the most powerful guild in this game? I'm just posing
yes.
that question.
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So she is the second in command of the most powerful guild in the game.
It's like being the vice president.
That's cool. Yeah.
Though you have to consider that Kirito did encounter them once, and he kind of slighted them by warding them off.
That's mm-hmm. true, too. In his That's mind, true. He probably owes Kirito some payback.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Good thinking, Tari.
That's what I'm here for.
Real quick, before we move on to the rest of the episode, we want to talk to you real quick about Maria Menounos' Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness. Since we were talking about food this episode, if you're looking for some really great recipes, they can be found in the Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness. Pick it up. It's available now. It's a great book. Awesome. Okay.
It will unfortunately not teach you how to tap food and have it immediately fall into perfectly cut pieces.
That's
not physically possible at this time.
It's not. But we can dream.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm building a robot, so no.
Wait, what?
Are you building a cooking robot?
Cooking robot.
Heck yeah. Is that like an easy bake oven or is it a legit cooking robot? Like with artificial intelligence.
I don't know the difference.
Program it to be Gordon Ramsay.
Yes.
Yeah. Then it just is yelling very angrily at you in this like little robotic voice. Anyway, so back to the episode. So as the two of them, as Kuridel leaves, as Laughing Coffin leaves.
Laughing Coffin.
Laughing
yeah.
Coffin.
Yeah.
As they leave, Kirito and Asuna decide to move forward and they start clearing the dungeon. And we see a lot of scenes that look like they're from the opening. We see them tackling these weird skeleton monsters mm-hmm. together and everything like that. And again, just, I can't stress it enough. The animation during this scene is so, so beautiful. And then as after they've pretty much cleared the entire dungeon and they come across a giant door. And it looks like it's the door to the boss room. And they kind of look at each other and go, what do? They've established earlier in the episode that the game has gotten more dangerous since level 70. That mm-hmm. there are places where you can't necessarily teleport out of. That people are getting killed in ways that they weren't getting killed before.
And more creatively, because now we have a murder guild.
Exactly. And so they get out their teleportation crystals and they decide, if this is the boss room, the boss will be confined to the room. It couldn't hurt to take a peek. But after having set up earlier in the episode that sometimes teleportation crystals don't work, it's a red flag. Right. I'm concerned about our heroes.
Foreshadowing.
I'm very concerned about our heroes. As they open up the door and what is inside but this goat-looking monster with these giant horns.
Thanks, Steven.
And a cobra for a tail.
It's like a cross between a chimera and a minotaur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A chimera is already a cross between a few things anyway.
It's a chimera
bipedal.
Minotaur, then?
It's bipedal.
It's a bipedal from chimera. Greek mythology.
Really?
Yeah.
Did those straight up have snakes for
Go
tails?
Ahead.
With the addition of the snake and the sword.
And so you open up the door and you have this monster and the gleam eyes comes up and its health bars appear. And that's when we smash cut to the end of the episode. Like I said, I really liked the first half of this episode, and I liked the battle scenes. I thought they were fantastic, and I like the dialogue between Asuna and Kirito. I really didn't obviously you're not supposed to like Kira deal, but I didn't like the fan service, and I didn't like the idea that Kirito had to step up and be Asuna's knight in shining armor.
Right. And the thing... Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, well... Because the series makes it very clear that they're meant to be equals. With the way they're portrayed, even from episode two, they defeated the boss together. In the opening, they show killing the monster together, standing side by side. And the last shot of the opening is their two swords. It's their two swords crossed, not several that Kirito has. It's their swords crossed together.
Yeah.
So they're meant to be equals. Even their color scheme, she's white and red, and he's black and blue. It's meant to be like yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
They're two halves of the same whole. So
he's also black and blue after they spar.
Very much so. So why does he have to be the knight in shining armor? They should just be equals and partners. I'm not a fan of that.
And what bothered me, what really pinged me about that scene after the fan service, was that her running behind him, she's the second in command, she's incredibly powerful, and this guy has freaked her out enough that she has to run behind someone else for safety. And that's a mental thing, and that's kind of something that can carry over from the real world.
That's true.
Is that there's something really, really wrong with this, and I no longer know what to do. I need to find safety. This guy will help me.
That's right. True.
Because they are still teenagers.
Yeah, and if it's bad enough to freak her out like that when she has that much power, that's a huge issue.
Sorry, how do you feel? Because I feel like I've gone on several tangents this episode because, like I said, I really like some of this episode and I really don't like some of it.
Right.
How do you feel?
I'm kind of in the same boat, though. I will argue that the second half of the episode was just a way of, like, tying in and justifying everything that happened before. So you get, like, the duel from the other episode. They talked about the teleport crystals not working, like, in Red Nose Reindeer.
So you figured it was more of, like, tying different elements from the... from previously mentioned plot devices,
right.
And we actually get to see them in action.
Right.
And I do like that. I do like to actually get to see duels and actually like to see gameplay and everything like that.
But
who knew a game, a TV show about being stuck in a game, and we actually get to see gameplay in this episode?
Were they killing lizards in this, like, white and black cave-looking place?
Yes.
Okay. I know what episode you guys are on.
Finally!
Took me a second.
I feel like we could have done all of that without victimizing Asuna.
Well, right. I wouldn't justify, like, that part, because it kind of struck me as well that, like, there was no reason for her to, like, use him as a shield in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
It kind of took away from her character in that, like, I respect her, like, a lot. Like, even more than Kirito, because he's just kind of doing his own thing.
Tari tweeted out a really great interview between Bryce Papenbrook and Shimeri Lee, or Shimeri Lee? I can never pronounce her name. But the leads for Asuna and Kirito for the English dub, there was an interview. Tari tweeted that out. And she feels that Asuna is a character that has a lot of integrity. So see things like this, it raises eyebrows and it raises red flags for me. I don't like when characters with that much integrity get jilted like this. But, Steven, you know which episode this was?
I know which episode it is, and I know which one the next one is, and you guys are going to enjoy the next two or three episodes.
All right.
Good.
Awesome.
You're going to really like them.
How did you like this episode?
I mean, I thought it was good. It kind of gave you a throwback to, like, when you played MMOs, like, the cooking and everything. It's kind of funny. But
it's a very nostalgic episode for
it was
that.
Let's build upon Asuna and Kirito's relationship kind of episode. But you'll see that more in the future. And then the next three episodes, you're going to be like, oh, I hate that guy. And you're going to be like, oh, this is good. And then you're going to be like, what? That's kind of like the basis for the next three episodes.
Right.
That sounds exciting.
And then next episode's going to have a lot of, like, action in it.
All right. I'm liking that because the action scenes in the series are fantastic. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about real quick before we wrap it up?
I did want to say that one thing I really enjoyed about this episode is now you get to see how Asuna really relies on Kirito. Like, I think everyone else kind of treats her like a princess, but he's the only one who treats her like a regular person.
That's true. He doesn't...
Ish.
He definitely still speaks his mind around her. And even when she knocks him back down, he becomes a little bit more respectful after that. But you're absolutely right. He doesn't treat her like she's made of glass.
Right.
So that's good, if nothing else. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this week's episode of Sword Art Online. Tari Miller, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Tari J. That's TauriJay. And you can also find me on Thursdays on the Dominion Panel.
I'm Katie Cullen. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Kiaxe. That's K-I-A-X-E-T. I'm also on the Attack on Titan panel.
You can follow Liz Rishmawi at Lizzie Maui on Twitter. That's L-I-Z-Z-Y-M-A-W-Y. You can also, if you like what we're doing here, please go to iTunes, slap us with a 5-star rating, leave a comment, let us know what you think. You can follow me on Twitter at TheMenguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. And I am also on the Attack on Titan panel here on Sunday nights. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Sword Art Online panel. We will see you guys next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.